You're listening to Brigade Radio 1. Welcome to One Recovery here live in the Brigade Radio 1 studios in beautiful Burbank, California. With us is, I'm your substitute host today. I'm with the criminal mastermind or the evil genius behind One Recovery, Lynn Peterson. Lynn, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm great. I love that description, by the way.
I know. You're really not a criminal. We're probably going to have to somehow censor that out because it may miss.
Maybe criminal minds.
Criminal minds. Yeah. Evil genius.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. I'm Ethan Dettenmeyer. To my left is Loda Hadley, who happens to be the producer of Life in the Know here at the studio. So it's kind of a... a convention of producing elements. But the main thing is we're here for you, Lynn, because we get a chance to reignite the One Recovery movement here and help some people out.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. And we have some really great shows coming up for the fall. So I think getting us together in this new amazing studio, I have to tell you, it's pretty exciting.
I feel like it's like the premiere episode of like a season 3 or season 4 on a series where it kind of starts with what happened while you were away. And what happened with us while we were away was we did an event with One Recovery down in Orange County.
Right.
Which from here is, on the edge of the planet. But it was with Tony Alva, which was brilliant. And he came out to talk to kids about substance abuse and how to make a difference. And truly a legend who had blazed his own trail in both the skateboarding arts,
right,
and the destructive arts, the partying arts.
Exactly.
And so he lived to tell about it, but very positive guy, now doing music and hanging out. We had a great conversation at your event, which was good. And I actually bid on a painting because it caught my attention, the auction sheet. You had all the kids at your organization did paintings, and one of them said, "Nobody cares." His painting said, "Nobody cares."
Right.
And I said, "I care. There's $20. So there."
That's so, or something like that. I know. I put every single one. They're like, the amount. I'm like, it's priceless. But yeah. And somebody said, "Are you really putting that out?" That one of the kids said, "Nobody cares." I'm like, right. Mm-hmm. He painted it. It's what he felt. So we put it out there.
It is a mirror into the soul, right?
It really is. It really is. But it was a great night. And Tony, most of our listeners probably know, but Tony Alva is a skating icon. And he has his own line right now, but he's also been endorsed by Vans and has the old school shoe is after Tony from Dogtown's Lords of Dogtown, the movie with Heath Ledger, very much tied to the addiction piece here, and the message was in his movie Lords of Dogtown. And it was a pretty incredible night, you know, having Tony Alva, who is known for, yes, his blazing in many ways in Venice, California, be in a lot of trouble and turning his life around, but talking about waiting decades to do it and everything he'd lost. And it was pretty amazing and pretty spiritual guy, right?
Yeah, very in tune with spiritual guru-ness, so to speak. Definitely has his own vibe. You know, it's interesting. We've, over the years, done a lot of radio work with all of those guys, including Skip Ingwem, who was played by Heath Ledger.
Oh, right, right.
And Stacey Peralta, who directed the documentary. And it's interesting that they've all got their sort of scars, you know. Stacey losing his son to what they said was alcohol poisoning or something to that effect. And they've had their challenges. But he was very open about it, and the kids seemed to listen. And I think sometimes, well, that's definitely what it takes. And that's what's great about your organization is you say, look, they're not going to, you know, I say the same thing about myself. No one wants to hear me tell it. We need to get someone who's on their level. Like, we need to get someone that they look up to tell it, because that's the only way it sinks in with young people today, right?
Right. And did I tell you how that came to pass? I was doing, you know, One Recovery, we're in schools. So for, as a reminder to people, One Recovery is a program of inspiration. We say inspiration is the new medication. And where the connection is human, and we have free support groups for parents and kids. And we're also on some campuses, and we offer this suspension exchange program. And instead of suspending kids, they can be, or I love to say ordered, like, you know, they go to Judge Land, but they're ordered to 8 meetings. And we decided to do middle schools this year. And so we're down in Orange County, and we went to a middle school so we could hit prevention. And so we're in the middle school, and I walk in the first group, and there's 30 kids at lunchtime who showed up voluntarily. And so I was explaining to them what One Recovery is about and that we use the arts and, you know, we want to bring in people that, you know, ignite them and inspire them. And so I said, okay, so give me some people. And so that, you know, there was like three names. I'm like, I don't even know. I'm going to need a translator. And then they said Tony Alva, and the boys went, yeah, because they're all skaters, right? And I was like, okay, like I'll meet that challenge. And I called a friend and said, you have got to get me Tony Alva. And I'd like to tell you it was like really difficult, but like one phone call was made and said, hey, Tony, there's these kids. He's like, I'm in.
Yeah, no, he alluded to that when we were at the break at the broadcast from the event where you were like, oh, thank you. Were very generous and saying, thank you so much for doing this. And he's like, ah, you know, I said I'd do it. You know, he said there was a charity cause and he was very nonchalant about being there, which if the audience listening doesn't fully appreciate that, we're in a business full of flakiness. So it is really unusual that somebody is so good about being somewhere because that's not normal.
Right. And you know what? And here's the other piece. And I just want to put this out there, how important it was that day. Vans, which I'm sure, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be getting any free tennis shoes, but this says a lot about their organization. But they had a huge event. And Tony was one of the featured people. I didn't know that. It was a Saturday. Yeah. And he was at this event and he went up to, you know, his spokesperson, his contact for Vans and said, listen, I have to cut out now because I have this speaking engagement for these kids down in Orange County. And you know what? Kudos to Vans. They're like, go, dude. And there were, I don't know, 10,000 people at that event. I mean, it was huge. And it had all the iconic skaters and kids skating like crazy. And he showed up like with just by himself. Well, no fanfare, just
it's a testament to how important he believes your cause to be or how he believes his path has now directed him to do these things, and these things have become of prominent importance to him. The man's been to thousands of skate events, and I'm sure he recognizes that each one does have its level of importance. But now I think what I read in him is that now he's compelled to, hey, I might be able to help a life or two. I've got to leave. And that's sort of what I read when he's having that discussion of it's time to cut out. I've made my appearance. And, you know, props to him. It really says a lot about what he's about. I understand that these guys, you know, I can't speak to Alva, but I know some of the rest of the gang has had their challenges and has been less than reliable at times. And now I think a lot of them now and being slightly older have kind of learned, like all of us, well, you know, maybe this is more important that I go and talk to these kids than hanging out with a bunch of skaters today. Not that there's any, and by skaters, I don't mean that as some sort of derogatory noun. I'm just saying, like, he made both appearances and he clearly saw some merit in being at your event. And, you know, let me tell you, he loved it. I can tell you, because that guy talked forever. I thought he had read the entire Bible. He's very spiritual, so he gets into the elements.
Yeah, and they sat there, right? All those kids with their skateboards just like sat there.
Must prove some sort of scientific research point. If you were to do any data mining on it, like if you get the right person to talk to kids, they will listen forever to that person.
Well, and you know, and that was the amazing thing too, because once I saw, you know, that Vans had that event, like I heard it on the radio or something, and I was like, oh no,
I hate that too.
Oh, and I was gonna call Tony or send him an email and go, you know, if it's a conflict, and I thought, Nolan, he's an adult, like he'll let you know. And then I was thinking, I don't know if Vans was ever going to show any interest in One Recovery, but maybe they won't like this. And then here's the thing. Like, there are, you know, there are good-hearted organizations out there, and it's nice to believe in that. And there's good-hearted people that follow through. And I'll tell you, when he walked up, I was like, I just love this man. Like, well, thank you.
And he deserves that praise. But, you know, in the case of Vans, if Vans is smart, and they must be to have gotten where they are at, they recognize that there's a relationship there, and hey, today he's got to go do something else. You know, and by forcing that or making him stay, they are probably smart enough to realize that that's going to probably strain things. He's going to be less inclined to do anything. His price is going to be locked or go up for whatever we're doing with him. But by saying, look, if that's important for you to go, go this time, they kind of prove themselves to be the better business partner in the mix. And that's something I think everyone who runs a business should look at. Like, look, there's a time, you know, we all, it takes a village, of course, but to be flexible when people have other things that are important to them is also very important, I think, to realize and say, look, you've done your time here. We've got the photo op. The kids have seen you. You know, say goodbye on the mic and close out and go save a few lives. Loda, what was your take? You were with us at that event.
One of the things I liked about him is what he said was he was full of himself. I mean, he admitted it. Right. It was not only drugs. He said he was totally self-absorbed. So when he kind of let that go, he kind of figured out what was happening in his life, and that's why he does the give back. But he said he thought, you know, I'm a skater. I'm good. I'm the shit. And he said it straight out. That's what he felt like he was. And he said he came full circle mm-hmm. and understood that he was there to help other people. And that's what he got out of that whole journey. And that I thought was amazing.
It, you know, that was a like a moment of realization, and you can see that he seriously meant that. And it's funny for those of us who, I had a Tony Alva board. I told him that actually, right. And it was actually a great board. The funny thing was, I was the only guy in my neighborhood with a Tony Alva board. Everyone else had these vision boards and stuff, and or Pal Peralta or whatever it was. I had an Alva board, but you know, at the end of the day, skating is just this one simple facet in life, and no matter how much money has changed hands for the epic few, or how much people love to do it, at the end of the day, it's just skating. It, and if you can somehow use it as a platform to improve, rather than let it dominate your life and become this sort of self-esteem driven ingredient, then I think you're going to do much better. I mean, it's nice to realize that at one point skating, you know, he did use that as sort of an offensive weapon, you know, when he talked like, I'm a skater, I don't need to do this. And then he realized, well, it's just, I think he even said, he goes, I was just a skater, mm-hmm. you know, and you kind of have that realization of like,
well, and like he, you know, he was just a skater, but a phenomenal one that built right. this. And what happened was, you know, he was handed it was fame. It wasn't really even the skating. Cause you know, we have kids that are like obsessed with skating, and you could be, you know, yes. Could you be the next Tony Alva? Could you be the next Tony Hawk? Could you be? Yeah, absolutely. And I want them to have that passion. But what he's showing, what I loved is, look, you can actually make it at this. But what happened was he overshot the mark. And there are people, because I was born and raised in California, and there are people that I talk to. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, Tony Alva's coming to speak. And they're like, he's an ass. I'm like, no, he's not. Like, he was so nice. Because it hasn't, like, the ripple hasn't spread that, like, no, dude, you don't understand. Like, this guy had an awakening like we all do, and I'm sure he might have had others, but this one, he hit his knees, and it got his attention.
Well, that's why he felt compelled to do your event and other events like yours, right. because he understands what his reputation is, and he understands how he got there, mm-hmm. and he understands that people out there are not awake to the fact that he's changed, mm-hmm. and he does have some damage control to do. And it's not surprising, but it's also, you know, I'm a fan of people getting second chances.
Me too.
You know, I think people deserve them quite often. I think people, you know, and what's really sad is by today's society standards, everyone is driven to somehow achieve some sort of fame as if that makes their problems go away. But no one's really geared for it when it happens, and they're really not prepared to deal with it. And it can create a situation like it did for Alva, where, you know, there's a lot of spiraling out of control, where, you know, it can be a pretty demonic force being mm-hmm. famous.
More
if you're not,
course.
Yeah, if you're not mentally ratcheted up to deal with it, then you could have your issues. But that brings us to this exciting moment of the halfway point, and we're getting the signal from field producer Mark Marshall. This is the man who was the post-production supervisor on Harry Potter, and we love him. Yes, we love him. We loved his work on the Free Willy movies, the Goonies movies, the Empire Strikes. But he's a noble guy and does a lot of our producing here at Brigade Radio 1.
And he's so nice to me, and it's not easy.
I know.
Right?
He's just a very, not I know that it's hard to be nice to
you. No, come on. All
right. But just that he is so nice. All right. So we're going to cut, and we'll be right back with One Recovery. Everyone, this is Ethan from Combat Radio. You know, one of the great literary works of art is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Now, you can get A Christmas Carol done by us, Combat Radio's very own version, with their epic cast of regulars, and you can help social services while you're at it. Go to cdbaby.com, enter Combat Radio Christmas 3, and bam, get yourself A Christmas Carol featuring Carolyn Hennessy of True Blood, Ian Buchanan of Twin Peaks, Stuart Penkin of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and many other epic personalities. Have yourself a Christmas anytime you want it. Welcome back. One Recovery with, well, Lynn Peterson.
Thank you.
Myself, Ethan Detmeyer, the lovely Lota Hadley to my left, who's the host of Life in the Know, which is also a show about people becoming more positive forces in the universe. I can't say enough good things about that. We were talking before the break about the great work that One Recovery did at an event. Well, they've done a lot of great events with great work, but with Tony Alva. And rather than us talk about it, Lynn, I think maybe we should just play it for the audience so they can get a sense of what this guy's about.
Let's do it.
So here it is. Tony Alva at the One Recovery event at, what was it, Newport High School?
Newport Harbor High.
Newport Harbor High.
Let's do it.
Hi, everyone. It's Ethan with Combat Radio. We're live in Newport Beach tonight at a special One Recovery Tony Alva event where he was just given the One Recovery Award of Awesomeness and gave us what is probably the best few words I've heard a public speaker give in a long time, ranging from Jesus to Frank Zappa. And it was pretty impressive. I have to admit, we were moved by what you had to say. Tony, how are you, first of all? Congratulations.
Good.
On the award.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor.
We're also with Lynn Peterson, the founder of One Recovery, who presented the Award of Awesomeness.
The One Award. Yeah, it equates to that.
It was actually a very cool award and a cool moment when he received it. And not that you're not here, Tony, but it was like a picture of you. We were in the back. What does the award look like?
It's actually really amazing.
It's like a decoupage plaque.
Right.
A decoupage plaque.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Done by the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So they picked the photo, and then we had an artist, Paul Butler, who put it down to the wood, and they took it. And it's actually like a form of screen printing. I don't even know, but
yeah.
It's to wood, and it's actually
a very
really beautiful.
Tasteful
yeah.
award for someone who clearly deserves it. I was mm-hmm. actually quite amazed by what I heard in there. And
it's a cool memory because it's a picture of me skating, and then my friend's little dog is chasing me as I'm skating into the pool to get away from him. But what you can tell, we're just like, it's in a moment of just like having fun.
Okay,
it's
I got fun. A couple of fun facts for you before we get started. Number one,
okay, here we go.
I had an Alva board when I was a kid.
Nice.
So I feel like I'm actually hipper than most people.
Right.
Because everyone in my neighborhood had those vision boards, and I had the real thing, and I felt like I was.
Well,
one
my
step
boards
above.
Are known for giving a little bit of street cred when it comes to that type of status.
That's right. I mean, you should see how the gangs just divided when I skated down the street and let them pass. It was awesome.
Either that or they start shooting at you.
Yeah, well, in this particular case, they were all wowed by it. Also, I should point out that one of our regulars, I mean, not to presume anything on friendships, but one of our regulars is Skip Ingle on
Skip
the show.
Skip is like a big brother to me. He's
we
an
love
amazing
him.
Guy. He's an amazing dude.
He's
amazing.
A big hero. He steps up every year for our annual Christmas event for homeless kids. He's a big hero. So we do have a
He's
friend in common.
He's also a recovering alcoholic as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, very impressed with you guys. And you're also a big Frank Zappa fan.
I'm a big rock and roll fan.
Yeah.
So I can quote Jim Morrison, Frank Zappa, the list goes on. It's like I study, like, especially either guys that have basically crashed and burned, and, you know, like Jimi Hendrix or Jim Morrison, all the way up to guys like David Bowie. You know, I've studied rock and roll. I'm a musician myself, and I know the good, the bad, and the ugly all about that whole era when it comes to music.
Well, it's funny you mentioned both Jim Morrison and Frank Zappa, because Frank Zappa's band, the surviving members who went on to be in Missing Persons, and Robbie Krieger, The Doors, played our charity party for the Super Bowl with the San Diego Charger cheerleaders. And that's funny that you mentioned them, because they're like now a musical unit, all those guys.
Well, the drummer that you're speaking of from Missing Persons is probably one of the best rock and roll drummers ever.
Yeah.
Terry Bozzio. He's amazing. He's amazing.
And I was going to actually ask, if you had to pick a song here to rock out to this interview, what would it be so we can actually close out with it when we're finished? What's your favorite rock and roll song of all time?
Oh, that is a really difficult question. I really like the Beatles and the Stones, believe it or not. I've always liked that song, Within You, Without You, the George Harrison kind of like the mantra. And then with the Stones, I would have to say Street Fightin' Man. That's a good one.
Does that fit you? What about Devo? Are you a big Devo
to
fan?
A certain extent. Devo, I knew those guys personally, and they were a little bit kind of new wave for my musical taste, even though they did do some really good songs. A friend of mine, Ray Barbie, and I just played in Japan. We have a little project called the Chicken Noodle Project. I play bass and Ray plays guitar. And we did do a cover, a Devo cover.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the, I think it was ISB, Itchy Swelling Brain.
Okay.
That's could be wrong about that.
Well, you were in a band, what, the Scoundrels or the, what is it?
I played in the Scoundrels. I played in a band called GFP. I played in quite a few different bands, mostly punk rock stuff, but Now my band that I'm in is centered and focused out of Orange County. We have a studio in Costa Mesa. Volcanic Studios is the place that we rehearse and record. And the name of the band is His Eyes Have Fangs. And we have a beautiful, talented singer named Rachel Rainwater that is an up-and-coming talent. And if you get a chance, you got to check this band out. It's amazing. I'm the bass player.
Oh, well, we like that. Okay.
So I've always been a bass player.
Can you give us some music to put into rotation back at the station? Give us a couple of tracks to play.
The music that I really like to listen to lately.
No, your music. We want your.
Our music is really beautiful. We have two records out. One coming out called Blue For You. That's an LP. And then we have an EP also. Like our original EP has a song on it called Blooming Flower that you can access through Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. If you go to His Eyes Have Fangs, go on Bandcamp. And it's, I think it's the second track on the first side, but it's a really beautiful song. And Blooming Flower, it talks about basically like a metamorphosis or an evolution of nature, but it also, I think, kind of, it has symbolism that represents to me our singer, the singer in our band, Rachel.
Excellent. All right. Well, listen, we're going to get our hands on that so we can play it for the audience.
I think you'll like it. It's very surfy. It's got blues kind of influence. And it also has a little funky kind of feeling to it. It has a little bit of a kind of an edgy, funky rock feeling. The drummer is married to the singer. His name is Matt, and he is one of the best drummers I've ever played with in my entire life. Seriously, he is an amazing talent.
All right. Well, there's something for our audience to check out and maybe support. Before we're kicked out of the building, I want to start from the top. Lynn, with you.
It won't be the first time we get kicked out of the building.
We're used to it. Sometimes we're not even allowed in the building to get kicked out.
I know.
I'm right there with you guys. I'm in that club.
I know.
Or sometimes they'll invite us in just to kick us out.
I've got Lauren over there as her cover, so I've got her. That's why she's sitting on the stairs.
Hey, real quick, it was a really good discussion from the stage tonight. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very impressive and very sincere. And sincerity is what's lacking in a lot of talks or shares or speeches in events like this, but this one was very based in personal experience and very sincere, and I think that's what people respond to most. But Lynn, what made you decide to present this award tonight? I mean, aside from the obvious now that this guy's awesome and he deserves the awesome award and all that, but what made you decide to step forward and say, we are giving this guy an award tonight?
Well, it's the essence of what One Recovery is. It's the One Award. It's one person connecting with another can alter the course of a life. And so what happened is we started this year, we rolled out at the middle schools in Newport Beach, Ensign Middle School, and we were going to do the blank canvas again, where kids define themselves through a blank canvas. You can write a song, you can do a piece of art, just tell me something that's inspirational. So to do that, we start hooking them into like what gets them grooving, for lack of another word. And mm-hmm. So I said to the kids, these little seventh and eighth graders, I'm like, okay, like let's get some inspiration going. Like, who inspires you? And you saw the little Rugrats in the front row, right?
Is that what? Is that an official title for those guys?
Is.
I don't want to, you know, you might want to step on
Rugrats.
Their cred. Knuckleheads?
Yeah. They don't like when I call them baby boys, but they are. So they're seventh and eighth graders, but they said, Tony Elva. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I'll just see if I can make it happen. And so we watched Tony's clip that he did for Vans that was so amazing. I knew about Lords of Dogtown. I'm open about the fact that I'm also in recovery. But, you know, I had no idea, Tony, like, I knew you inspired the kids, Lords of Dogtown, and then, you know, the Z-Boys, all this stuff, all our little skater kids in Orange County, they idolize you. Well, when I saw that Vans clip, I was like, I literally got goosebumps. It's beautiful, like, where you talk about the humility, because that, it was such a great setup having the kids watch Lords of Dogtown, because you watch, the excess and the ego and the this, and then that Vans clip where you just talk about how all of those things are what brought you down.
Well, when you're ego-driven, you know, it's a hard or a fine line between humiliation and humility. And, you know, what I was talking about is the transformation, because what happens is when you get over the point of, like, it's all about me, the self-centeredness and the selfish thinking, then you have a chance to actually see that there's some humility in self-realization and realizing who you really are and what you really are. And for me, it was all about finding a spiritual path in life that took me to a higher level. And the only way that I could do that is I had to start over. And I literally had to start over by abstaining from using any mood-altering substances, because I was a daily weed smoker and I was a binge drinker. Like my father, I had this alcoholic DNA that I had to learn how to deal with. And that's what my story is about. And it's about rigorous honesty, because I'm not afraid to share that with others.
Right.
And I know who I am and feel comfortable with how I got here. But at the same time, it's like, it's part of my story. And if I can help one other person realize that in their own life, then I've achieved the goal.
So you're like the superpower, you know, the superhero using his powers for good, basically.
Well, and it's, that's the one award. So the power of one.
I'm using my connection, though, to what was given to me freely. And what was given to me freely is my sobriety.
Right.
But I don't take credit for my success. I give it to God, because I know straight up that without my relationship with a higher power, without God-driven wisdom and intuition and peace and like all of the things that I'm experiencing that are positive in my life, I wouldn't be able to be that guy. You know, and it's just, it's that simple. It's like, I'm not gonna like try to be like the celebrity status avatar slash saint, you know, because that's not my goal. My goal is to create an avenue for a solution for people that are having issues that's worked for me, and share that with them. But at the same time, be humble enough to know that I'm doing God's will, that it's not me that's doing this. It's basically me just channeling the benevolence of something connected to a higher power.
Let me ask you, when did you come to that realization? Have you known that your whole life, or was that a thing that...
I had a sense of it, but I didn't know it until I actually got sober, because I had no clarity. I had a sense of it because I knew my heart was in the right place at times, and I also went through all of these emotional highs and lows of the good and the bad and the dualities of life. I was battling life instead of going with the flow when I was younger. But when I got older, and I realized, especially with sobriety, that there was truly a path that led to being happy, joyous, and free, and I got on that path and I stayed on it, and I started practicing the principles of the program that I went through with my sponsor, I knew that that was what I'd been looking for my entire life. I knew it. I knew it in my gut. I knew it in my heart, my soul, and eventually my head connected with what my heart's wish was. And my heart's wish was just really to be comfortable in my own skin. And I started feeling comfortable with who I am. And I knew that to carry that message with my celebrity status and my iconic kind of antics of being like this leader and a hero, that I had a chance to affect other people's lives in such a profound way that there was no way that I could ignore that, that I had to get on that mission and charge it just like I do with surfing and skateboarding. And that's what I do. That's my life today. It's more important than skateboarding.
And that's more important. What happened, that's what was conveyed through the video when the kids watched it. That's what was conveyed from the podium. And that's the whole essence of the One Award is one, the power of one. One person can truly alter the path of another. And that's the biggest piece. And when you, and it's not even so much in words, right, Tony? It's like you can
feel
it.
Well, it's to be of service, yeah. Because like if you can't get out of yourself, what is the easiest way to get out of yourself? Be of service to somebody else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we believe
it's
in that
simple.
Too. Yeah,
Be of service.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We believe in that philanthropic.
I was at a big
well.
Skateboard contest. There right. were thousands of kids there today and stuff. And like for me to be there and be the big hero and all that, that's fine and dandy because that's my job. But when she called me out to come and do this event, regardless of how many people and how famous and how cool I'm going to look, I do the contrary action thing. I'm immediately say yes. And I'm a man of my word. I show up regardless. So because my head, my like self-centered head tells me, make up an excuse and back out of it and say no. That's my initial response from an alcoholic personality. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing that, I did the contrary action thing. I said, yes, of course I'll be there.
It was beautiful. And let me
That's
say
how it
this,
happened.
Because I didn't know that there was the big skate, as cool as I think I am. I didn't know there was the big skateboarding thing, and I got like an alert, you know, through an email for something that I'm connected to with Vans because of watching your video, and I'm like, oh, there's a big skateboarding thing today, and I was like,
it didn't matter though.
And you, you had already said yes. You didn't, and you know, I had confirmed or whatever. I sent Tony like what was like a 3-page email of everything One Recovery's ever done, so he could just see how cool the deal is. And I'm like, you know, and this is that, and this is that. I'm like, can you, and blah blah blah, story. And I think what was like 2 words you wrote back, like, absolutely, like, you know, it's
for the kids.
If this
was in the ghetto of Tijuana, like, Mexico, or in the Bronx, or if this was in the southwest corner of Chicago, it would not matter. And I'm not making myself out to be like holier than thou or a hero, but I would show up because of the fact that I know that's God's will for me and it's meant to be. And I also know that what I was taught through, you know, AA and other things that really work for drug addicts and alcoholics, and, you know, not to say that Newport Beach is a sordid spot, because it's not, it's a beautiful place, but right. I still show up because it says in our book, it says, I will go to the most sordid place on earth to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's without blowing the anonymity out of the fellowship. I'm just here to say that it works. It works for me. And if it works for me, it can work for lots of other people that are suffering. And that's my mission, is to carry that message to the alcoholic or drug addict that's still suffering.
Well, and I'll tell you the prevention piece, if we can just hit that right now with those, the 7th and 8th graders that were sitting out there.
Well, you have to plant the seed.
But I will tell you, they're already, you know, experimenting, especially in the OC right now. There's a lot going on with heroin. There's a lot going on with edibles.
And the legality of marijuana, which is ridiculous, but I'm not even going to get into that right now.
Right, yeah,
but
we don't even need to go. But the thing
I'm
is...
I'm not a hater when it comes to drugs and stuff like that, though, because I can't, because people don't want to hear that. And the bottom line is, we're not going to tell people how to run their lives and tell them that drugs are good or bad. They have to experience that in their own lives to realize it. But I realized it. It took me a long time to realize it. And I know I can tell you straight up from being a daily weed smoker for years and years and years, weed is a gateway drug, no matter which way you look at it. Because the kid that gets tired of smoking weed every day is going to want that opiate high. And when he gets that opiate high, he's going to end up either at the heroin dealer on the street, or he's going to end up getting pharmaceuticals into his system, which is going to lead to mixing it with alcohol and with things like Ambien. And an early death, we just lost one of our major talented best surfers in the entire world due to that type of addiction. I'm not going to mention names, but the bottom line is, it's been a proven fact that if you start by smoking weed and graduate to harder and just more insanely powerful drugs, you're gambling with your life. And it's no joke.
I'm so happy you said that, because I am telling you, more people are going to listen to you, Tony, than listen to me about it. But I'm telling, I tell them, I'm like, hey, especially down here right now, the kids are eating edibles in the schools. You know, some of their parents, let's just call it out, like, I'll call it out, no problem, we'll get their marijuana cards. And my biggest point is this: look, they have one brain. It's not even fully formed until they're 25. And what's happening is we're robbing them of the ability to build their internal coping mechanisms. They're medicating away every feeling they have. They're not feeling their heartbreak. They're not feeling this. They're not feeling.
Well,
and
what
this
happens
is not the pot
it stunts 70s. Your emotional growth.
Exactly.
And part of the reason that alcoholics drink, even into a stage of like incomprehensible demoralization every time they drink, is because when you've stunted your emotional growth at such a young age, okay, what takes over is your instinct. And your instinct, being especially a man, like in my situation, is my infantile ego. If I'm still acting like a 19-year-old kid at 49 or 50 years old, something's wrong there, man. It's like the infantile ego thing is like the core of a problem when it comes to alcoholic thinking. Muhammad Ali said, if you're acting at 49 years old the same as you did when you're 19 years old, you've wasted 30 years of your life. That's a quote from Muhammad Ali, who was a very wise man and a Muslim, but at the same time, a very spiritual man. And, you know, he made mistakes and he paid some dues. But I know when I hear wise words spoken like that from a man, you know, like Martin Luther King or Muhammad Ali, the list goes on. There's so many sages and just like saintly leaders that we've had in this country. And it doesn't always have to relate to the problem with alcohol and drugs. I think what it relates to more than anything is the spiritual malady that this country has.
Well, speaking as one of the few people that's actually been kicked out of Mexico, I'm impressed that you're willing to go in there and actually spread your message. That's very impressive. But what I'd like to know is, what were some of the kids saying to you after you shared some of your stories with them?
Well, the Mexican kids are my people, you know, and like, and a lot of times the pride gets in the way because of the fact that Mexicans have a chauvinistic, really alpha male. I would say like they're very macho. They, you know, the Mexican culture is very macho. So half the kids don't want to hear it and are not ready to hear it and are going to keep doing what they're going to do because they haven't hit a low enough bottom to where they're ready to change. And then there's another half that are very spiritual and very calm and very cool and have kind of been there and know and identify with what I'm talking about, especially when it comes to mixing drugs with alcohol. And tequila, look at tequila as far as like booze goes. Man, tequila is like strong stuff and it definitely has some spiritual qualities, you know. But it just ends up in a, like, it's a dead end. It's just a dead end deal. When you wake up in the morning dehydrated and hungover and you got a headache and you just don't want to do anything, you have no motivation, you feel sick again. I mean, you got to realize those are the symptoms of alcoholism, but they're also the symptoms of overindulging in something that started out as fun and games, but ended up being deadly serious. So, and if you mix drugs with that, there's a chance that you could end up killing yourself.
Yeah, agreed. What did some of the kids tonight, based on hearing what you said, what sticks out from them in response to your message? It was pretty powerful.
The thing that sticks out with these kids is that they had the patience to sit there and listen. And I'll tell you one thing, because I'm not always a good listener myself. Love can be evaluated in a simple act of listening.
Yeah.
If we want to show somebody that we have love and tolerance for them, have the patience to listen. Truly listen, not judge. Judgment and listening are two different things.
And to see those kids with their boards, I mean, I kept trying to get a shot of the kids sitting in the auditorium in the front row, like with their boards at their feet and
right.
As squirrely as they can be, you know, they were in it.
They're because, young, yeah. So they're not going to be able to sit there too long and like completely focus all their energy on what you're saying. But the bottom line is that the key words, if they pick that up,
yep.
Then there's a mission that is like not impossible, but totally possible. And
well, look at the question. What did he
when
ask,
I was
ask you
young,
about Jay?
When I was young, I had a lot of contempt prior to investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's ignorance. So if you can knock these kids into just the aisle of like understanding and having a sense of like just even a few moments of there where their attention span is focused on the solution of what mm-hmm. we're speaking about, then you alleviate them from going into the dark zone of contempt prior to investigation. If you're already making judgment before you investigate something, that's purely goes back to the single word ignorance, to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
To ignore is to be ignorant.
Okay.
Well, think about, like, this is like to your question about what they asked, but I thought it was really profound that one of the boys asked you about Jay. Like, it yeah. let me know that he retained the story from Lords of Dogtown because he hadn't seen the whole thing. And, you know, Jay passing, that's a big deal. And
he actually passed the week he was supposed to do this show.
Really?
Oddly enough, yeah. And he wanted, it's funny, his one condition to doing the show was he wanted to talk about Jesus. That was the one thing he
that's
sent
okay.
to us.
If that's his
and we
avatar,
said, of course.
If
know,
that's his idea. Avatar, then I think more power to him. You know, like I said, I believe in the words of Jesus as well. I don't believe that I can't get to God unless I go through Jesus. That's just my personal belief. Because I know I have a one-on-one relationship and constant contact with God, regardless of what my beliefs are in the Word of Christ. But I don't take the Word of Christ for granted. And I don't scoff and try to judge or have disdain for it.
Give me three pointers. Give me three sort of bits of wisdom out of the Tony Alva handbook that everyone should know for a happy, tranquil life.
First and foremost, be willing to get out of yourself. Two, I think you have to have a firm belief in the fact that just waking up in the morning and taking a breath, fundamentally, all is well.
Right.
And last but not least, go out and see if you can do something basically benevolent in your daily practice of prayer and meditation. Take that vibration that you get from praying and meditating to the next level by being there for somebody else. Do something for somebody other than yourself. And don't do it for fame, power, money, or praise.
Well, you get a lot out of being of service to other people. You get it's hard to define what that actually is for those who aren't involved in charity work or an aspect of sort of service. But if you do get involved in that role, you do seem to get a lot of sort of
It can be as simple as just smiling at somebody or basically like yielding and giving somebody the right of way on the road, though. I mean, it starts with the really simple, basic things that I find living in a city like Los Angeles is a rare commodity sometimes nowadays. Well, everybody fighting for their space, their little real estate, you know, and people being just seriously like rude to each other, whether it be through words, actions, or otherwise. So, I mean, love is a rare commodity in this world nowadays, and I think I always think of the Beatles songs, you know, All We Need Is Love. But I think with so much fear and negativity in the world today due to the climate, you know, of not only politics, but also the fact that I think spirituality has been put on the back shelf by a lot of people in their daily goings on. We need to get back to basics, and to get back to basics is to put spiritual principles first.
Well, as someone who sat in traffic for about 5 hours to get here today, I'm with you on this. Let someone have the lane change. And the first song that came into my mind was AC/DC's Highway to Hell. But I'll go with the Beatles because I like what you're saying. Lynn, what do you think? Give me 3-1 recovery pointers real quick that people can take with them from this show.
Well, I think tonight just the art of one and being able, it's just that human connection. It's that these simple things that I repeat over and over again, but they are mantras, like inspiration is the medication, that we don't need to put pills in our body to alter us. Our boys don't need to be medicated so they behave within concrete walls. You know, that where the connection is human, all things are possible. And I just want to say, I know we have to wrap it up because we're getting ready. We're going to get kicked out, Tony, I swear. But the beautiful thing is that, look, back in the day when, like, I would go to the skateboard contest and we laughed because here's the beauty. Here's, like, the golden thread thing. You know, Tony didn't cancel. And then when he walked up, he's like, oh, my God, you know Chris Stropel, who was, like, a skateboarder back in the day. And I used to follow, like, Chris. He skateboarded in the back of the Sierra Madre Police Department. And
there's more of a story there, but we'll save it for next time.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Well, but here's the thing. This is where I see the thread, like that Tony and I didn't know each other, but we knew each other because he was willing to come out and share with the kids. And then all of a sudden, here's this other connection of this other person. And it is one person connecting with another, no matter how simple it is. And it is acts of kindness and opening up your heart that can alter the course of lives. And I think that is what happened here tonight. If you knew those boys, gets me super emotional, who are sitting in that front row. The fact that these kids came on a Saturday, you don't understand. Some of these kids have to take the bus. We had 20 of those kids that got here on their own. A boy who was getting ready to be kicked out of school because he was the bully. His principal came here tonight to say to me, Lynn, this is causing a shift. Do you know, like, he's not going to be kicked out now. And I will tell you something, Tony, by you coming here with your dreads, like the skateboard dude that they all idolize, like hearing
I'm like
you
Popeye,
pass the
I
word.
Am what I am.
Yeah, you know, and you, just... but coming out of your mouth, what happened? They asked for you, and you came, and you talked about God, and you talked about sobriety.
I'm on a mission, you know, but I'm just going to tell you one thing. If you do the math, 20 equals 200, 200 equals 2,000, 2,000 equals 200. The mesh... All you have to do is get the message out to two kids and it multiplies, because what happens is it becomes contagious. It's the mission basically that not only gives me what I was like given so gracefully for free, that it's a good contagion. You can spread something like cancer, but in a positive way so that it doesn't do more damage. That it basically starts to cleanse and scrub away all of the just sinful filth that has been perpetrated amongst these kids because of the fact that they've been giving these false idols of like machismo and self-centeredness and money and fame and all of these false like goals to work towards, when in reality, all they really need to do is work together and to create and make this world a better place to live in. And it's that simple. And it comes from the clarity that we get from being clean and sober, but it also comes from the principles of any spiritual path that anybody in the world that believes in a higher power, which I call God, strives to work towards in their life. And it's just, that's it. It's that black and white, really, in a way.
Well, we like what you're saying, Tony, and it was a heroic appearance nonetheless. I want to say real quick, special thanks to the to Chris. The on-site supervisor who's allowed us
I'm so sorry.
To do this show without kicking us
we
out,
so
although
many
he's
kids.
Threading the
yeah,
needle
so
on
many
it.
Kids that wanted Tony's time, it pushed us back. But
we're all right. We're all cool. Right? We're cool. It's all good.
Before we wrap up, we'll give the last word to our guest, but I want to say tomorrow is Mother's Day, and most of us have a special respect for
I
the women that got
I should have worn my
through.
I Love Mom shirt. I usually
yeah,
wear
really?
Them.
Come on now.
I have one. It's Mile of Music from Appleton, Wisconsin. I went to a music festival and they gave me a shirt that says I Love Mom on it. And every time I wear it, especially playing with my band, everybody thinks that, you know, it's truly an I Love Mom shirt, which to me it is. So yeah. I'm going to wear it tomorrow for my mom for Mother's
it on
Day.
There. That's a good one. But from my wife to my mother to Lynn, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you.
Special respect to all the moms out there. And I want to say real quick in closing, there was a great silent auction over there, and someone painted a picture that went up for $5, and the artist wrote on it, "Who cares?" So I had to get on there, and I signed, "We care."
It's all the kids' art. That was a silent auction. It was all the kids' art.
I owe you
$10
bucks because I
well, you
I
know what we
the
put
bid.
On there? We put... What is the worth? We said priceless, and then everything started at $5. It was like it was the kid's art. But anyway, Tony, thank you from the bottom
You're
of my
welcome.
Heart.
You're
welcome,
everybody.
You so
I
much.
Hope that everybody has a special prayer tomorrow for their divine mother that exists in their life, because without mothers, there would be no life. So, let's all have a special prayer and meditation for our moms tomorrow.
Yeah,
thank
heroic,
you so much.
Heroic work from both of you. Lynn, I guess my One Recovery Award's in the mail, right?
It really is. It's in the mail. I'm surprised you didn't get it. It's weird.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to do this again. But in all sincerity, an epic appearance tonight. Real, real sincere appearance. Something I think I wish we had it recorded, because it's something that everyone can get something out of. But we'll stay on the positive track.
Well, I'm hoping Tony will do it again. Santa Monica.
Sure.
Boom. Step up homeless shelter for kids. They want us to do something up there. So maybe Tony can get on board.
There's no way that you could say no to that. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. That's the way it goes. That's the way we roll, as we say.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how we roll.
That's how we
roll. Tony, last word goes to you, buddy.
I just wanted to say that, it's really cool that my sponsors, Vans, and like I own my own business, and all those people have been so supportive of the changes I've gone through in my life. And when I told Steve Van Doren that I was coming here, who's basically the vice president of my shoe sponsor that's still holding that contest today, he just gave me like the thumbs up sign. It was like, more power to you. And I think that people have really seen the change in me and know that it's a benevolent cause and that I'm on a mission. And if people believe in me and I can carry that message, I'm not going to carry anybody through anything that I haven't experienced myself. But I know deep down in my heart and my soul that this is a mission that is possible, not impossible. And I will continue to do this for the rest of my life if given the opportunity.
Well, God bless you both for the
Thank
good work.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Happy Mother's Day, and we'll catch you next time. This is Ethan with Combat Radio here live at the home of the Sailors,
Newport
Beach
High School.
Right on. Peace.
Hey, everyone. It's Ethan with Combat Radio. You know, one of the projects we're most proud of around here is the two-disc audiobook we produced with Disney legend Bob Gurr. From his years of working with Walt Disney to designing the T-Rex for Jurassic Park to Godzilla 1998, the work this man has done is legendary. He designed elements of the Matterhorn, Monorail, Haunted Mansion, Autopia, and much, much more. Get the two-disc audiobook at CD Baby. Just go to CD Baby and enter Fail Fast. Combat Radio Conversations with Disney legend Bob Gurr, and bang, you're on your way to greatness. Welcome back. Well, it doesn't get much better than that. True testimonial from a skating legend, right? Great event, by the way. If you haven't heard that enough on today's show, that was a great event.
It really was. I was so proud. I had like a smile like busting my face. And the kids that showed up, they were all skating out in front of Newport Harbor High. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not supposed to. Apparently it's some form of a crime.
It wouldn't be the first time I've seen skaters push it
right.
in society,
but I was like,
right?
Look at, I have got middle schoolers that showed up on their own on a Saturday to come here, Tony Alva. I'm going to let them skate wherever they want. Like, and they had him sign the boards. Did you see that? It was so adorable.
That was very cool. And I should actually give props to the janitorial staff at that school.
Oh, yes.
Because they let us run late. We were the last ones out of there, and they never pushed us out.
Chris. Props to Chris.
We should send him a thank you because he let us go and go and go. And usually people get kind of, they want to go home to their families, but he was very generous. And that brings us to today's debatable moment here on One Recovery, which is
during the
interview, we were having a conversation about the use of pot. And we should probably clarify where we all stand on this.
I have been sober for 33 years.
I don't smoke pot, but I don't like to police people who do. Is my personal
stance. I've
never
been called a policeman, but it was law enforcement was in my family. So go ahead. Yeah.
It's in my family too. And actually my brother-in-law, I just called him out. My brother-in-law actually says he doesn't like to police it. Actually, he says he doesn't like the...
Well, it's exhausting for them, I'm sure.
He says he prefers to focus on violent crimes and real crimes against... Not that that's... I mean,
you're just walking yourself.
I know.
I've lost it. I win.
But no, because we were at a conversation where we were talking earlier, and I said I'm going to lose my college audience because you guys are so sober when it comes to smoking marijuana. But we were telling a story about how we went to a friend of mine who's a television producer. Went to his party with my daughter, who's got a very strong anti-drug approach. And he goes, "Hey, great to see you. The beer's over there. The bar's over there. The pot's over there. You know, Hollywood party."
Right.
And my kid's like, "Wait a minute, what?" And he goes, "Oops." And so we went into the food, and there was this thing labeled adult cigarettes. She goes, "Oh my God, he really does have pot here." My kid was very, very like put off, but still understood she was a guest in his home. And so she goes to him later. First thing was when we walked up to the party, the first thing she asked him is, "How many of these guests here are off of your Tinder profile?" Was the first question. 14-year-old, right?
He
started laughing out loud. And he goes, "You really do have pot here." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm really sorry. I should have probably put it away before you got here." And she goes, "No, it's just I've never been in a room with it. I've never seen it. I don't, you know, it's your business." And that's kind of my take too, I guess. But little my wife is here.
My problem with society, to me, it's kind of seems like it's two-faced. I think that the alcohol distributors are anti-marijuana more than anything else, because I think alcohol,
probably,
when I've seen people who have too much alcohol, I've seen them violent, break things. I've really never seen somebody who's got too much pot go up and pick a fight and stuff like that. Usually like pass out and fall asleep. So to me, they're both.
And let me just offer this. That is like old school pot. I'm just holding my tongue until I get there. This new strain. Okay, there's not one new strain, but I'm just going to pretend that there is. What these kids today are on now, it's frightening.
Really?
Their behaviors. I mean, the fact that we're okay with it and they're going to like drive next to us in cars and when they can't barely even function. I mean, it is frightening.
Well, I think you and I are both agree that that's not what people should be doing. I think,
driving,
you know,
right.
None of us, I mean, we're not advocates that you should go out and smoke.
No,
pot
I think we're all kind of saying
it.
The same thing. We're just coming from a totally like our own perspective.
But I agree with you what you're saying. You should not smoke anything or any
or
kind of mind altering anything.
I don't
get
do
up behind the
anything
wheel
and drive,
you know,
period.
Right.
Like not anything. Like people, we were at a function the other day and, they said, "Oh, do you want to have just a glass of wine at my cousin's party?" And I'm like, "I don't drink and drive."
No,
because
neither do I.
Somebody went through this to me. My friend of mine, who's a vice president at Universal, had a big party, and this guy showed up in a town car, and we're thinking, "Oh, big time." And he explained it to us. He said, "It cost me $200 for this town car to take me here and take me home. If I got a DUI," and he started breaking it down in numerically, and he told me how much the ticket was, how much the tow was, how much time he'd take off from work. Pretty soon that puppy added up, and this was a couple years ago, like 10 grand. Mm-hmm. I'm taking the town
it is,
car.
It is 10 grand, but to be honest with you, in an age of Lyft and Uber, there's really no excuse for drinking and driving. I mean, we can't make it more easier to get a ride out of a place now. Mm. And you were saying, Lynn, that you encourage.
Do you want to ask my stance on the pot?
Yeah, I would like to actually ask
my
your stance
on the pot.
I know it, but I think
marijuana?
The audience should hear it.
Okay, so here's what I think. Okay, that the brain is not fully formed until these kids are 25, and so there is nothing that aggravates me more than people go, "Well, it's just pot." No, I'm sorry, it's not just pot. Like, I have dealt with thousands, and this is not an exaggeration, you know, thousands of teenagers over my 33 years, And 9 times out of 10, it starts with pot. It did with me. It's a, you know, it really truly is a gateway drug. I get to have my own opinion. That's what it is. And it's based on fact and my own experience, and not just my own experience in using when I was a teenager, but in treating and working with adolescents for 33 years. But the biggest piece now is that it is, you know, these, the pot is manufactured like in China. It's not like there are things that they're adding to marijuana that's insane. It's being cultivated. This is not the pot of the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or even the 90s.
Well, I'm against that for sure. I want it to be an organic cash crop made here in the United States and then only used for paper and other things.
Right. And what I tell the kids is, look, you only get one brain. And this like concept really seems to be working on them. It's because, you know, first they look at me like, yeah, you idiot. We're fully aware of that. But then it like sinks in like, wait a minute. I'm like, you get one brain.
Right.
So before it's fully formed, which doesn't happen until you're 25, you better be careful about what you do to affect it. And what happens with pot, and let me explain like where I see like the detox and the issue with it, is that it's robbing these kids, it's my favorite soapbox speech, of their ability to build their internal muscle, their internal coping mechanism. Because if you break my heart, I'll just go get high and I don't really have to feel it. If I don't get into that college, I'm just going to get high. If things are just too much and I get high and take the edge off, the problem is every time I take the edge off, I never learn organically how to meet life at its edge and make it to the other side. Those are our failures to launch.
Well, but it's safe to say I had lost this argument.
But to me, that same argument, goes for alcohol too.
It does.
Oh yeah, no, I'm with you.
So that's what I'm saying is.
Yeah, no, what, I'm totally against like
underage. What I say is,
the
if they're going
thing,
to say no to one, say no to both, because they're about to me the same on each side.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem.
I totally agree. Because part of, here's the other argument, is Uber and Lyft. We're going to have a whole show about this. This is going to, we'll do this with, you know, Dr. Matt Polachek, invite you all in, Dr.
Uh-oh.
Don Grant. We're going to do a throwdown. Because in this situation, I will have parents who say to me, okay, and this almost got me a couple times, but I came back. You know, Lynn, like, let's go with the alcohol. Well, at least my kids are drinking in my home. Or, you know, well, it doesn't matter because they can Uber home. I'm like, okay, first off, let's go with the easy shot in the dark. It's illegal. They can't drink until they're 21. Okay, we're talking about California right now. They can't drink until they're 21. So number one, it's against the law. Number two, they'll go, well, you know what? If they don't drink in my house with me, they'll go drink somewhere else and something else could happen. So I'd rather have them with me so I can supervise. So that one, you know, used to cause me pause. I'm like, ugh. First off, they don't need to be drinking at all. And their point is they're going to. So if we tell them no, they're going to go somewhere else. And you know what? They're right. They will. It's true. If it's a Saturday night party and somebody's having a graduation party and your loser party isn't going to have any alcohol, the kids will probably go to the house where the alcohol is. But if we had something like on the One Recovery website, that's the number one, recovery.com, there's something called the Parent Pledge. And it's parents down in Orange County that are willing to sign up and say, I pledge that I will not have alcohol in my home. I will not have parties. We're trying to band together. You know what's really hard is the peer pressure of parents, because there are still so many parents out there that want to be the cool parents that they are serving the alcohol and they won't do it. So let me tell you my answer to this argument with all those other things thrown in is this. And it's going to sound like, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, many for the few or few for the many, however you want to look at this. But let's say you choose to not have alcohol at that party. Well, you're absolutely right. Those kids, some of those kids are going to go on somewhere else. But you know what? Some of them aren't. You may even lose 20% of the kids that aren't going to go on to the next party. And what I want to say, and what we'll revisit at another show very thoroughly, is those 20%, those are the kids that succumb to peer pressure, that really don't even want to drink in the first place. So we've actually like been able to save those 20%. While yes, the others probably will go on, but also they may be predisposed and have an addictive personality in the first place. I'm all about saving them too. I leave no one behind. But I think it's an important show that we like go at it and give it the full court press. Do you not agree, my friends?
And one thing I would say to parents is this, because I gave my daughter an 18th birthday party. if a kid needs to bring a backpack to a party, check that puppy.
Or if an adult's got a backpack, that person, first of all, the fashion police should stop them immediately.
I don't know. It's a thing now. They do it. The hipsters. It's all about it. The hipsters. They don't do briefcases. They do backpacks.
Well, this is a subject that I think has got some pretty heavy caliber to it. It's obviously going to take more than what we've got today to discuss, but it's certainly good to open up the doors on it and figure out ways to help kids get through their problems. And I sense what you're saying is correct, that you know you shouldn't have a marijuana alternative to the failures in your life. You should be able to address those and reconstruct those. But in closing, well, first of all, thank you to Loda Hadley, the producer of Life in the Know. And for Lynn Peterson, I guess the last word goes to you.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and we'll have a lot of really great shows coming up this fall. And, you know, check out the website, onerecovery.com. And if you want to support us, please click on that link at the bottom, because we could use all the support we can get to provide these free meetings and these exciting events for the kids.
All right. For us here at One Recovery, thank you for joining us. And you can catch this show and others at BrigadeRadio1.org.
You're listening to Brigade Radio 1.